This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents the unabridged recording of Emotional Intelligence 2.0 by Travis Bradbury and Gene Greaves, performed by Tom Parks. Foreword. Not education, not experience, not knowledge or intellectual horsepower. None of these serve as an adequate predictor as to why one person succeeds and another doesn't. There's something else going on that society doesn't seem to account for. We see examples of this every day in our workplaces, our homes, our churches, our schools, and our neighborhoods. We observe supposedly brilliant and well-educated people struggle, while others with fewer obvious skills or attributes flourish, and we ask ourselves, why? The answer almost always has to do with this concept called emotional intelligence. And while it is harder to identify and measure than IQ or experience, and certainly difficult to capture on a resume, its power cannot be denied. And by now, it's not exactly a secret. People have been talking about emotional intelligence for a while, but somehow they haven't been able to harness its power. After all, as a society, we continue to focus most of our self-improvement energy in the pursuit of knowledge, experience, intelligence, and education. This would be fine if we could honestly say we had a full understanding of our emotions, not to mention the emotions of others, and an understanding of how our emotions influence our lives so fundamentally every day. I think the reason for this gap between the popularity of emotional intelligence as a concept and its application in society is twofold. First, people just don't understand it. They often mistake emotional intelligence for a form of charisma or gregariousness. Second, they don't see it as something that can be improved. Either you have it or you don't. And that's why this is such a helpful book. By understanding what emotional intelligence really is and how we can manage it in our lives, we can begin to leverage all of that intelligence, education, and experience we've been storing up for all these years. So whether you've been wondering about emotional intelligence for years or know nothing about it, this book can drastically change the way you think about success. You might want to read it twice. Patrick Lencioni, author of The 5 Dysfunctions of a Team, president of the Table Group. Chapter 1. The Journey. The warm California sun greeted Butch Connor as he stepped out of his truck and onto the sands of Salmon Creek Beach. It was the first day of a long holiday weekend and a perfect morning to grab his board and head out for a surf. Most of the other local surfers had the same idea that morning, and after 30 minutes or so, Butch decided to leave the crowd behind. He penetrated the water's surface with long, deep strokes that propelled him away from the pack and over to a stretch of beach where he could catch a few waves away from the crowd. Once Butch had paddled a good 40 yards away from the other surfers, he sat up on his board and bobbed up and down in the rolling swells while he waited for a wave that caught his fancy. A beautiful teal wave began to crest as it approached the shoreline, and as Butch lay down on his board to catch the wave, a loud splash behind him stole his attention. Butch glanced over his right shoulder and froze in horror at the sight of a 14-inch gray dorsal fin cutting through the water toward him. Butch's muscles locked up, and he lay there in a panic, gasping for air. He became hyper-focused on his surroundings. He could hear his heart pounding as he watched the sun glistening on the fin's moist surface. The approaching wave stood tall to reveal Butch's worst nightmare in the shimmering, translucent surface. A massive, great white shark that stretched 14 feet from nose to tail. Paralyzed by the fear coursing through his veins, Butch let the wave roll past, and with it a speedy ride to the safety of the shoreline. It was just the shark and him now. It swam in a semicircle and approached him head-on. The shark drifted in slowly along his left side, and he was too transfixed by the proximity of the massive fish to notice his left leg dangling perilously off his surfboard in the frigid salt water. "It's as big around as my Volkswagen," Butch thought, as the dorsal fin approached. He felt the sudden urge to reach out and touch the shark. "It's going to kill me anyway. Why shouldn't I touch it?" The shark didn't give him a chance. The shark, with a massive chomp of its jaws, thrust its head upward from underneath Butch's leg. Butch's leg stayed on top of the shark's rising boulder-sized head and out of its cavernous mouth, and he fell off the opposite side of his surfboard into the murky water. Butch splashing into the water sent the shark into a spastic frenzy. The shark waved its head about maniacally while snapping its jaws open and shut. The great white struck nothing. It blasted water in all directions as it thrashed about. The irony of floating alongside a 3,000-pound killing machine without so much as a scratch was not lost on Butch. Neither was the grave reality that this apex predator was unlikely to miss again. Thoughts of escape and survival flooded Butch's mind as quickly and completely as terror had in the moments prior. The shark stopped snapping and swam around Butch in tight circles. Instead of climbing back on his surfboard, Butch floated on his belly with his arms draped over the board. He rotated the surfboard as the shark circled, using the surfboard as a makeshift barrier between himself and the man-eater. Butch's fear morphed into anger as he waited for the beast to strike. The shark came at him again, and Butch decided it was time to put up a fight. He aimed the sharp-pointed nose of his surfboard at the shark as it approached. When it raised its head out of the water to bite, Butch jammed the nose of the board into the shark's slotted gills. This blow sent the shark into another bout of nervous thrashing. Butch climbed atop his board and yelled, "Shark!" at the pack of surfers down the beach. Butch's warning and the sight of the turbulent cauldron of white water around him sent the surfers racing for dry land. Butch also paddled toward safety, but the shark stopped him dead in his tracks after just a few strokes. It surfaced in his path to the shoreline and then began circling him once more. Butch came to the dire conclusion that his evasive tactics were merely delaying the inevitable, and a paralyzing fear took hold of him yet again. Butch lay there trembling on his surfboard while the shark circled. He mustered the will to keep the tip of his board pointed in the shark's direction, but he was too terror-stricken to get back in the water and use his board as a barrier. Butch's thoughts raced between terror and sadness. He wondered what his three children were going to do without him, and how long his girlfriend would take to move on with her life. He wanted to live. He wanted to escape this monster, and he needed to calm down if that was ever going to happen. Butch convinced himself that the shark could sense his fear like a rabid dog. He decided that he must get hold of himself, because it was his fear that was motivating the shark to strike. To Butch's surprise, his body listened. The trembling subsided, and the blood returned to his arms and legs. He felt strong. He was ready to paddle. And paddle Butch did, straight for the shoreline. A healthy rip current ensured that his journey to shore was a nerve-rattling 5 minutes of paddling like mad, with the sense that the shark was somewhere behind him and could strike at any moment. When Butch made it to the beach, an awestruck group of surfers and other beachgoers were waiting for him. The surfers thanked him profusely for the warning and patted him on the back. For Butch Connor, standing on dry land had never felt so good. When Reason and Feeling Collide. Butch and the Great White weren't fighting the only battle in the water that morning. Deep inside Butch's brain, His reason struggled for control of his behavior against an onslaught of intense emotions. The bulk of the time, his feelings won out, which was mostly to his detriment, paralyzing fear, but at times a benefit, the anger-fueled jab of his surfboard. With great effort, Butch was able to calm himself down and, realizing the shark wasn't going away, make the risky paddle for shore that saved his life. Though most of us will never have to tussle with a great white shark, our brains battle it out like Butch's every single day. The daily challenge of dealing effectively with emotions is critical to the human condition because our brains are hardwired to give emotions the upper hand. Here's how it works. Everything you see, smell, hear, taste, and touch travels through your body in the form of electric signals. These signals pass from cell to cell until they reach their ultimate destination, your brain. They enter your brain at the base near the spinal cord, but must travel to your frontal lobe behind your forehead before reaching the place where rational, logical thinking takes place. The trouble is, they pass through your limbic system along the way, the place where emotions are produced. This journey ensures you experience things emotionally before your reason can kick into gear. The rational area of your brain, the front of your brain, can't stop the emotion felt by your limbic system. But the two areas do influence each other and maintain constant communication. The communication between your emotional and rational brains is the physical source of emotional intelligence. When emotional intelligence was first discovered, it served as the missing link in a peculiar finding. People with the highest levels of intelligence, IQ, outperform those with average IQs just 20% of the time, while people with average IQs outperform those with high IQs 70% of the time. This anomaly threw a massive wrench into what many people had always assumed was the source of success, IQ. Scientists realized there must be another variable that explained success above and beyond one's IQ, and years of research and countless studies pointed to emotional intelligence, EQ, as the critical factor. A Time magazine cover and hours of television coverage introduced millions to EQ, and once people were exposed to it, they wanted to know more. They wanted to know how EQ worked and who had it. Most importantly, people wanted to know if they had it. Books emerged to scratch this itch, including our own, the Emotional Intelligence QuickBook. Released in 2004, the QuickBook was unique, and still is, because each copy contained a passcode that let the reader go online and take the world's most popular EQ test, the Emotional Intelligence Appraisal, registered trademark. The book satisfied readers' curiosity by teaching the ins and outs of EQ and, thanks to the test, providing a new self-perspective that wasn't available anywhere else. The Emotional Intelligence QuickBook hit home. It was an instant bestseller that has been translated into 23 languages and is now available in more than 150 countries. But times have changed. The emotional intelligence field is on the steep incline of a new wave of understanding, how people can improve their EQ and make lasting gains that have a profoundly positive impact upon their lives. Just as knowing your EQ score was reserved for the privileged few before the publication of the Emotional Intelligence QuickBook, learning how to increase your EQ is something that happens only in isolated circles. Our company trains hundreds of people each week to increase their EQ. But even at this pace, it would take 3,840 years to hit every adult in the U.S. We realize that we've unwittingly been holding important information back. We believe everyone should have the opportunity to increase his or her EQ and have created this book to make it possible. Your journey. Emotional Intelligence 2.0 has one purpose. increasing your EQ. This will take you far beyond knowing what EQ is and how you score. You'll discover time-tested strategies that you can begin using today to take your EQ to new heights. As you transform yourself and bring new skills into your life, you'll reap all of the benefits that this incredible human ability has to offer. The 66 strategies in this book are the result of many years of careful testing with people just like you. These strategies provide the specifics of what you need to say, do, and think to increase your EQ. To glean everything they have to offer, you need to know where to focus your attention. The first major step in your journey to a higher EQ is to go online and take the new edition of the Emotional Intelligence Appraisal Test. Taking the test now provides a baseline against which you can gauge your improvement as you listen on and learn. Measuring your EQ takes your learning beyond a conceptual or motivational exercise. Your score profile uncovers the EQ skills you need to improve the most, and it pinpoints the individual strategies from this book that will get you there. This feature is new to 2.0, and it takes the guesswork out of choosing the strategies that will increase your EQ the most. The value of measuring your EQ now is akin to learning the waltz with an actual partner. If I tell you how the dance works, you are likely to learn something and may even get the urge to try it yourself. If, as I show you how to do a waltz, you practice each step with a partner, your chances of remembering them later on the dance floor go up exponentially. The EQ profile you receive from taking the Emotional Intelligence Appraisal is your dance partner in developing these skills. It will remind you where to step with every beat of the music. Your online report includes a goal tracking system that summarizes the skills you're working on and provides automatic reminders to help you stay focused. E-learning activities bring EQ to life via clips from Hollywood movies, television, and real-world events. You will also learn how your scores compare to other people's. You will see what percentage of the population you scored higher than and how your scores compare to those of specific groups with which you share certain characteristics. You can ask your report to contrast your scores with others based on gender, age, region of the world, job type, and job title. For example, you might discover how you compare to other women in their 40s who hold a marketing manager title at a company in North America. In addition to receiving the most accurate scores possible, taking the Emotional Intelligence Appraisal now lets you see how much your EQ scores increase with time. You can take the test twice, once now, and again after you've had enough time to practice and adopt the strategies from this book. After you complete the test a second time, your updated feedback report will display your scores side by side and offer insights into how you've changed and what your next steps should be to keep your EQ working for you. Visit www.talentsmart.com/test to access the Emotional Intelligence Appraisal. Click on the I'm Ready button, then sign in using the unique passcode found in the top flap of your audiobook box. The passcode is for one person only. If you have purchased a download of this audiobook and have not been sent a passcode, contact your download provider. Library patrons should note that the passcode will only be valid for the first-time user. Other users may purchase the Emotional Intelligence Appraisal at www.talentsmart.com. Emotions can help you, and they can hurt you, but you have no say in the matter until you understand them. We invite you to begin your journey now, because we know that emotional mastery and understanding can become realities for you. Chapter 2, The Big Picture. Before you take a closer look at each of the four EQ skills in the next chapter, there are some important things you need to know about EQ as a whole. Over the last decade, we've tested more than 500,000 people to explore the role emotions play in daily living. We've learned how people see themselves versus what others see, and we've observed how various choices affect personal and professional success. Despite the growing focus on EQ, a global deficit in understanding and managing emotions remains. Only 36% of the people we tested are able to accurately identify their emotions as they happen. This means that two-thirds of us are typically controlled by our emotions and are not yet skilled at spotting them and using them to our benefit. Emotional awareness and understanding are not taught in school. We enter the workforce knowing how to read, write, and report on bodies of knowledge, but too often, we lack the skills to manage our emotions in the heat of the challenging problems that we face. Good decisions require far more than factual knowledge. They're made using self-knowledge and emotional mastery when they're needed most. Considering the range of emotions people express, it's no wonder they can get the better of us. We have so many words to describe the feelings that surface in life, yet all emotions are derivations of five core feelings: happiness, sadness, anger, fear, and shame. As you move through your daily routine, whether you're working, spending time with family or friends, eating, exercising, relaxing, or even sleeping, you are subject to a constant stream of emotions. It is so easy to forget that we have emotional reactions to almost everything that happens in our lives, whether we notice them or not. The complexity of these emotions is revealed in their varying forms of intensity. Triggers and emotional hijackings. While Butch Connor was being attacked by a great white shark, he experienced several emotional hijackings, moments when his emotions controlled his behavior and he reacted without thinking. Typically, the more intense your emotions are, the greater the likelihood that they will dictate your actions. Matters of life or death, such as being attacked by a massive beast, are certain to induce a temporary emotional hijacking. In Butch's case, emotional hijackings left him paralyzed by fear, but even in the presence of a man-eater, Butch was able to use his thoughts to take back control from his emotions. Butch reasoned with himself until the paralysis subsided and he was calm enough to complete the paddle to shore. Butch's thoughts didn't make his feelings of fear and terror disappear, but they did keep his emotions from hijacking his behavior. Since our brains are wired to make us emotional creatures, your first reaction to an event is always going to be an emotional one. You have no control over this part of the process. You do control the thoughts that follow an emotion, and you have a great deal of say in how you react to an emotion as long as you are aware of it. Some experiences produce emotions that you are easily aware of. Other times, emotions may seem non-existent. When something generates a prolonged emotional reaction in you, it's called a trigger event. Your reaction to your triggers is shaped by your personal history, which includes your experience with similar situations. As your EQ skills grow, you'll learn to spot your triggers and practice productive ways of responding that will become habitual. Sizing up the whole person. Emotional intelligence is your ability to recognize and understand emotions in yourself and others, and your ability to use this awareness to manage your behavior and relationships. Emotional intelligence is the something in each of us that is a bit intangible. It affects how we manage behavior, navigate social complexities, and make personal decisions that achieve positive results. Emotional intelligence taps into a fundamental element of human behavior that is distinct from your intellect. There is no known connection between IQ and EQ. You simply can't predict EQ based on how smart someone is. Cognitive intelligence, or IQ, is not flexible. Your IQ, short of a traumatic event such as a brain injury, is fixed from birth. You don't get smarter by learning new facts or information. Intelligence is your ability to learn, and it's the same at age 15 as it is at age 50. EQ, on the other hand, is a flexible skill that can be learned. While it is true that some people are naturally more emotionally intelligent than others, a high EQ can be developed even if you aren't born with it. Personality is the final piece in the puzzle. It's the stable style that defines each of us. Your personality is a result of your preferences, such as your inclination to introversion or extroversion. However, like IQ, personality can't be used to predict emotional intelligence. Also, like IQ, personality is stable over a lifetime. Personality traits appear early in life, and they don't go away. People often assume that certain traits, for example, extroversion, are associated with a higher EQ. But those who prefer to be with other people are no more emotionally intelligent than people who prefer to be alone. You can use your personality to assist in developing your EQ, but the latter isn't dependent on the former. EQ is a flexible skill, while personality does not change. IQ, EQ, and personality assessed together are the best way to get a picture of the whole person. When you measure all three in a single individual, they don't overlap much. Instead, each covers unique ground that helps to explain what makes a person tick. The impact of EQ. How much of an impact does EQ have on your professional success? The short answer is a lot. It's a powerful way to focus your energy in one direction with a tremendous result. We've tested EQ alongside 33 other important workplace behaviors and found that it subsumes the majority of them, including time management, decision-making, and communication. Your EQ is the foundation for a host of critical skills. It impacts most everything you say and do each day. EQ is so critical to success that it accounts for 58% of performance in all types of jobs. It's the single biggest predictor of performance in the workplace and the strongest driver of leadership and personal excellence. No matter whether people measure high or low in EQ, they can work to improve it, and those who score low can actually catch up to their coworkers. Research conducted at the business school at the University of Queensland in Australia discovered that people who are low in EQ and job performance can match their colleagues who excel in both solely by working to improve their EQ. Of all the people we've studied at work, we have found that 90% of high performers are also high in EQ. On the flip side, just 20% of low performers are high in EQ. You can be a high performer without EQ, but the chances are slim. People who develop their EQ tend to be successful on the job because the two go hand in hand. Naturally, people with high EQs make more money, an average of $29,000 more per year than people with low EQs. The link between EQ and earnings is so direct that every point increase in EQ adds $1,300 to an annual salary. These findings hold true for people in all industries, at all levels, in every region of the world. We haven't yet been able to find a job in which performance and pay aren't tied closely to EQ. In order to be successful and fulfilled nowadays, you must learn to maximize your EQ skills. For those who employ a unique blend of reason and feeling achieve the greatest results. The remainder of this book will show you how to make this happen. Chapter 3. What emotional intelligence looks like. Understanding the four skills. To truly understand your ability in the four emotional intelligence skills, you need to better understand each skill and what it looks like in action. The four emotional intelligence skills pair up under two primary competencies, personal competence and social competence. Personal competence is made up of your self-awareness and self-management skills, which focus more on you individually than on your interactions with other people. Personal competence is your ability to stay aware of your emotions and manage your behavior and tendencies. Social competence is made up of your social awareness and relationship management skills. Social competence is your ability to understand other people's moods, behavior, and motives in order to improve the quality of your relationships. Self-awareness. Self-awareness is your ability to accurately perceive your own emotions in the moment and understand your tendencies across situations. Self-awareness includes staying on top of your typical reactions to specific events, challenges, and people. A keen understanding of your tendencies is important. It helps you quickly make sense of your emotions. A high degree of self-awareness requires a willingness to tolerate the discomfort of focusing on feelings that may be negative. The only way to genuinely understand your emotions is to spend enough time thinking through them to figure out where they come from and why they're there. Emotions always serve a purpose. Because they are reactions to your life experience, emotions always come from somewhere. Many times, emotions seem to arise out of thin air, and it's important to understand why something gets a reaction out of you. People who do this can cut to the core of a feeling quickly. Situations that create strong emotions will always require more thought, and these prolonged periods of self-reflection often keep you from doing something that you'll regret. Self-awareness is not about discovering deep, dark secrets or unconscious motivations, but rather it comes from developing a straightforward and honest understanding of what makes you tick. People high in self-awareness are remarkably clear in their understanding of what they do well, what motivates and satisfies them, and which people in situations push their buttons. The surprising thing about self-awareness is that just thinking about it helps you improve the skill, even though much of your focus initially tends to be on what you do wrong. Having self-awareness means you aren't afraid of your emotional mistakes. They tell you what you should be doing differently and provide the steady stream of information you need to understand as your life unfolds. Self-awareness is a foundational skill. When you have it, self-awareness makes the other emotional intelligence skills much easier to use. As self-awareness increases, people's satisfaction with life, defined as their ability to reach their goals at work and at home, skyrockets. Self-awareness is so important for job performance that 83% of people high in self-awareness are top performers, and just 2% of bottom performers are high in self-awareness. Why is this so? When you're self-aware, you are far more likely to pursue the right opportunities, put your strengths to work, and perhaps most importantly, keep your emotions from holding you back. The need for self-awareness has never been greater. Guided by the mistaken notion that psychology deals exclusively with pathology, we assume that the only time to learn about ourselves is in the face of crisis. We tend to embrace those things with which we're comfortable and put the blinders on the moment something makes us uncomfortable. But it's really the whole picture that serves us. The more we understand the beauty and the blemishes, the better we're able to achieve our full potential. What self-awareness looks like. Dave T., Regional Service Manager, self-awareness score 95. Scores are on the 1 to 100 point scale from the emotional intelligence appraisal. Scores and coworker comments are from actual people, though names and other identifying information have been altered. End note. What people who work with him say. Dave has clear long-term goals, and he doesn't make sacrifices for short-term gains. Dave's an upfront kind of guy who doesn't play mind games with people. I've witnessed this at company meetings and in meetings with customers. The best example I can provide for Dave is his move to our company. I'm sure there was an intense desire to make changes within the local team right out of the gate, but Dave took extra care to diagnose the situation, the team, and the customer prior to offering suggestions or mandates for change.
In short, Dave manages his emotions. They don't manage him. I've seen him accept difficult business news with a brief frown, then he quickly moves beyond that and partners with his team to find solutions to improve the situation.
Maria M., Human Resources Manager, Self-Awareness Score, 90. What people who work with her say? In every situation that I've been involved with, good or bad, Maria has always remained calm, cool, and collected. Even at times when I know she must have felt frustrated or angry. Maria is really honest about what she's feeling without getting bent out of shape about it. When faced with a difficult situation, she knows how to be firm and still kind at the same time.
She's open and authentic at all times, and it's so meaningful to everyone that she interacts with. I would suggest that Maria not change. However, she can get a bit tougher sooner in some cases. She is aware of this and watches to ensure that she does not let kindness get in the way.
During challenging situations with employees, Maria is very aware of her tone and makes an effort to keep the conversation appropriate. People here trust her.
What a lack of self-awareness looks like. Tina J., Marketing Manager, Self-Awareness Score, 69. What people who work with her say? On occasion, Tina's stress and sense of urgency are projected, pushed onto other people. It would be good for her to better understand how her behavior affects others' work and emotional stress. Also, she sometimes comes across as defensive or aggressive, so for her to be more aware of her tone and language would be helpful. When things are going well for Tina, her emotional intelligence skills are stronger. She needs to learn to read herself and recognize her triggers so that she can respond more effectively when triggered.
She needs to become aware of how she's perceived. She can come across as being very demanding, but I don't believe she means to.
Giles B., Operations Director, Self-Awareness Score, 67. What people who work with him say.
Giles is very much in his own little world. He obviously does care about his coworkers, but he doesn't seem to know where to draw a line. His personality can be overwhelming, but he doesn't notice when the other person is feeling annoyed, frustrated, or overwhelmed by him.
When working with customers, he is very good at talking about the products and services we offer. On group projects, sometimes he gets so focused on the outcome, the process is missed. If he were to take a moment and let all the emotions settle, then take a look at the options to reach the desired outcome, things would go more smoothly.
Giles is passionate about what he does. Sometimes that passion gets in the way. He might not notice that I'm busy with something else before he jumps in and starts talking to me. When he's excited, he talks over you, and it's hard to get a word in edgewise. He doesn't mean to. He just is excited about what he does.
Self-management. Self-management is what happens when you act or do not act. It is dependent on your self-awareness and is the second major part of personal competence. Self-management is your ability to use your awareness of your emotions to stay flexible and direct your behavior positively. This means managing your emotional reactions to situations and people. Some emotions create a paralyzing fear that makes your thinking so cloudy that the best course of action is nowhere to be found, assuming that there is something you should be doing. In these cases, self-management is revealed by your ability to tolerate the uncertainty as you explore your emotions and options. Once you understand and build comfort with what you are feeling, the best course of action will show itself. Self-management is more than resisting explosive or problematic behavior. The biggest challenge that people face is managing their tendencies over time and applying their skills in a variety of situations. Obvious and momentary opportunities for self-control, that is,
I'm so mad at that darn dog, are the easiest to spot and manage. Real results come from putting your momentary needs on hold to pursue larger, more important goals. The realization of such goals is often delayed, meaning that your commitment to self-management will be tested over and over again. Those who manage themselves the best are able to see things through without cracking. Success comes to those who can put their needs on hold and continually manage their tendencies. What self-management looks like. Lane L., healthcare administrator, self-management score 93. What people who work with her say. Lane is the epitome of patience and understanding during heated, emotionally charged meetings. Others around her become fully embroiled in the discussions, and Lane actively listens and responds with knowledge and wisdom. I've seen firsthand how well she deals with difficult situations, for example, termination of an employee. Lane is sensitive, yet direct and to the point. She listens patiently and sets a high standard of conduct. Lane is great one-on-one. She communicates well and thinks on her feet. Her reaction to crisis is excellent. Her ability to separate emotion from logic makes her a good tactical manager. I wish there were many more of her. Yeshi M., computer programmer, self-management score, 91. What people who work with him say. Yeshi handles stressful and confrontational situations very well. No matter how harshly project managers, PMs, hammer Yeshi, he never loses his cool. This gives him a lot of credibility with the PMs. He's also able to work with other people whose working style he isn't a fan of. I know going back and forth with them can be frustrating sometimes, but Yeshi never loses his patience. I've seen Yeshi in an extremely frustrating situation where he couldn't get something done because other people didn't do their jobs. He dealt with it politely and professionally. He was able to explain the procedure again in order to achieve the best possible solution, even though he was upset. I've never heard Yeshi speak negatively about someone who has a different opinion or idea. A lot of talking behind people's backs happens around here, and he doesn't give in to the temptation, even when he feels strongly about an issue. What a lack of self-management looks like. Jason L., information technology consultant, self-management score 59. What people who work with him say. In stressful situations or when something goes wrong, Jason sometimes responds too quickly, sharply, or disjointedly. I wish Jason would take some time to cool off and slow down before responding. He's so emotional. I've seen his coworkers respond in disbelief to the manner in which he communicated with them. Jason means well, but can panic when he's stressed. His reactions trickle onto his teammates. Jason should be more aware of his verbal outbursts and how they affect both clients and coworkers. He's not mean-spirited. He cares a great deal about others. But these verbal miscues are just that, outbursts that need to be thought out before expressed. These happen more when he's stressed. As the old commercial says, he shouldn't let them see him sweat so much. Jason lets his emotions rule his behavior. Sometimes he acts or speaks hurriedly. I wish he'd be a bit more patient and give the situation an opportunity to work itself out before reacting. Many times these situations resolve themselves or aren't quite as urgent as he perceives, but before you know it, he's heightened the intensity with a flurry of messages. May S., regional sales director, self-management score 61. What people who work with her say. May needs to not be so honest. Her staff don't need to know about all of the bull that goes down at corporate. If certain things upset her, she needs to learn to keep them to herself. When she's unhappy, it sets the tone for our team. May tends to radiate stress in certain situations, and as a leader, it impacts her team negatively by creating stress and negativity rather than diffusing them. May has a hard time congratulating staff for their accomplishments, and it comes across as jealousy. Feels like I'm in competition with her rather than feeling like she wants me to succeed. I think May's a great sales professional, and she treats clients well. I wish she'd give her employees the same treatment.
May needs to be proactive instead of reactive. In times of crisis, she shouldn't reveal to everyone how stressed she is. She's so focused and driven to personally succeed that perhaps she takes on too much herself. She has a demanding workload managing the West Coast team, but she needs to hold her emotions back when people vent about their own problems in meetings.
Social awareness. As the first component of social competence, social awareness is a foundational skill. Social awareness is your ability to accurately pick up on emotions in other people and understand what is really going on with them. This often means perceiving what other people are thinking and feeling, even if you do not feel the same way. It's easy to get caught up in your own emotions and forget to consider the perspective of the other party. Social awareness ensures you stay focused and absorb critical information. Listening and observing are the most important elements of social awareness. To listen well and observe what's going on around us, we have to stop doing many things we like to do. We have to stop talking. Stop the monologue that may be running through our minds. Stop anticipating the point the other person is about to make. And stop thinking ahead to what we are going to say next. It takes practice to really watch people as you interact with them and get a good sense of what they are thinking and feeling. At times, you'll feel like an anthropologist. Anthropologists make their living watching others in their natural state without letting their own thoughts and feelings disturb the observation. This is social awareness in its purest form. The difference is you won't be 100 yards away watching events unfold through a pair of binoculars. To be socially aware, you have to spot and understand people's emotions while you're right there in the middle of it, a contributing yet astutely aware member of the interaction. What social awareness looks like. Alfonso J., Pharmaceutical Sales Manager, Social Awareness Skill, 96. What people who work with him say.
Alfonso has a rare talent to be able to read the emotions of others very well. He adjusts to different situations and manages to build relationships with almost anyone. Good examples are dinners, meetings, ride-alongs with reps.
Alfonso does an excellent job relating to the frustrations reps have with other departments within our company. He's always looking out for his reps and has the ability to put himself in the rep's shoes and ask himself what's wrong with the situation. People become very loyal to Alfonso.
Alfonso recognizes emotions very effectively when it comes to the end-of-month numbers and end-of-year numbers with his reps, getting the most out of his team. He was great at building relationships with the surgeons at the dinner table because he could read how to lead the conversation without them feeling like they were being controlled.
Maya S., Organizational Development Executive, Social Awareness Score, 92. What people who work with her say. Maya has an uncanny ability to spot and address the elephant in the room. She does a good job acknowledging other people's feelings when communicating difficult news. She reflects how others are feeling and adapts her communication style to help reach a resolution. She gets to know people on a personal level so she can better understand their perspectives and work well with them.
Maya's great in executive team meetings where she respectfully listens to her peers and then offers her opinion. She has a sincere interest in understanding people and offers them valuable insights based on what they're saying or doing. She's a good team builder who strengthens bonds within the team.
Maya is the most effective, active listener I have ever seen. She's skilled at communicating the context for her comments with the goal of ensuring understanding. She's respectful toward others while being able to establish her authority. Maya motivates and inspires people. She can uplift people and put them at ease.
what a lack of social awareness looks like. Craig C., attorney, social awareness score 55. What people who work with him say. Craig needs to allow others to feel good about their ideas, even when he has a better plan. He also needs to be more patient and allow them to have equally effective plans that are just different from his plan. I would like him to seek to understand what people are feeling and thinking and notice what evidence there is regarding situations before speaking his opinion or offering solutions. Craig needs to listen better. He needs to pay attention to what's being said rather than thinking about what he wants to say. It's usually apparent in his body language that he's not listening, which puts people off. I also wish that he'd be more accurate when representing other people's ideas. Craig is not one to socialize. He's so focused on work and sometimes comes across as not interested in what's going on with a person on that particular day. When he has new ideas, or ideas from his former firm, he has a hard time explaining them so the staff will accept them. Craig should learn to listen to others with his ears and with his heart. He seems to have a hardening of his positions, and it makes him unwilling to accept other people's viewpoints or include their input in his decisions. Rachel M., project manager, social awareness score 62. What people who work with her say. Rachel misses the non-technical currents in meetings. The mood and evolution of opinions are lost on her. Rachel needs to learn to absorb the non-technical, human side of meetings and become a student of people and their feelings. Rachel gets singularly focused on a particular issue and does not see the forest for the trees. This can get frustrating for those of us around her. She's typically oblivious to our reactions. She should check with everyone around the table to calibrate where their head is at before getting too enmeshed in the details of her project. She would be better served by framing the topic in large chunks rather than taking everyone through the details straight away. Rachel can sometimes get so caught up in her own thoughts during meetings and one-on-one conversations that she's not really listening to either the explicit or implicit dialogue going on. This makes her less effective because she's not actively participating in the ongoing conversation and misses opportunities to influence the direction. Rachel needs to work on considering issues from the other person's agenda or point of view so that she can more effectively influence, or at least directly address, their perspective. It will also help her to work on making her conversations as concise and targeted as possible. People can lose interest or get confused during long explanations or when they're unclear about the message. Relationship management. Though relationship management is the second component of social competence, this skill often taps into your abilities in the first three emotional intelligence skills, self-awareness, self-management, and social awareness. Relationship management is your ability to use your awareness of your own emotions and those of others to manage interactions successfully. This ensures clear communication and effective handling of conflict. Relationship management is also the bond you build with others over time. People who manage relationships well are able to see the benefit of connecting with many different people, even those they're not fond of. Solid relationships are something that should be sought and cherished. They are the result of how you understand people, how you treat them, and the history you share. The weaker the connection you have with someone, the harder it is to get your point across. If you want people to listen, you have to practice relationship management and seek benefits from every relationship, especially the challenging ones. The difference between an interaction and a relationship is a matter of frequency. It's a product of the quality, depth, and time you spend interacting with another person. Relationship management poses the greatest challenge for most people during times of stress. When you consider that more than 70% of the people we've tested have difficulty handling stress, it's easy to see why building quality relationships poses a challenge. Some of the most challenging and stressful situations people face are at work. Conflicts at work tend to fester when people passively avoid problems because people lack the skills needed to initiate a direct yet constructive conversation. Conflicts at work tend to explode when people don't manage their anger or frustration and choose to take it out on other people. Relationship management gives you the skills you need to avoid both scenarios and make the most out of every interaction you have with another person. What relationship management looks like. Gail C., Chief Financial Officer, Relationship Management Score, 95. What people who work with her say. Gail has an innate ability to read people and their emotions, and she uses what she learns to create a safe and inviting forum for discussion. There has never been a time that Gail's door was not open when I've needed her, and she always manages to maintain a pleasant and professional manner even when her workload is demanding. People know that they can count on Gail, and what they say to her in confidence will be respected and not repeated.
Gail is very sensitive to others and tries to make situations better. When someone is upset, she asks just enough questions to get a handle on the situation, and then is able to give concrete advice and help to the person, making them feel 100% better. Gail makes you feel smart and confident when she delivers feedback, even if you've made a mistake. She helps her staff improve and grow, and she sets a good example for dealing with people assertively and speaking up. Even during tough conversations, Gail is concerned about maintaining good, comfortable relationships with all parties involved. Gail finds out something about the other person's interests and inquires about it when meeting, even if it appears there's no common ground. Gail has a firm handle on her own emotions and almost seems to feel what you feel when she's talking with you, which helps you feel like she relates to you and understands you.
Alistair B., Physician. Relation Management Score, 93. What people who work with him say. Alistair is a wonderfully patient, empathetic listener, which is why his patients love him. He tries very hard to be non-judgmental and gives people the benefit of the doubt. He is the same way with the nurses and technicians. I've seen Alistair in situations where his patients' families were asking difficult questions, and he was able to remain calm and answer without alienating the family members asking the questions. He listens carefully to what others say and never shows if he is upset or bothered by it. He responds kindly but with authority.
Alistair's interaction skills are supreme. In situations that I've witnessed him less than pleased with a specific outcome, he has always expressed his position with thoughtful insight about his expectations without anger or outburst. I'd describe him as direct, yet free from confrontation or sounding out of control. He is also quick to praise the staff's efforts and success when deserving. He is good at seeing the overall picture and then counseling in a compassionate and realistic manner.
I have never left Alistair feeling anything less than 110%. He knows when to approach an issue sensitively and knows when to give praise and encouragement. Alistair knows his colleagues very well, and this enables him to handle conflict in a calm and positive manner. He is respected for collecting feedback before drawing conclusions. He tries to find the best way to communicate with others, even when there's an atmosphere of resistance, confusion, or outright conflict. His ability to empathize with others is outstanding, and it creates positive, strong relationships.
What a lack of relationship management looks like. Dave M., Sales Manager, Relationship Management Score, 66. What people who work with him say.
If Dave doesn't see eye to eye with someone, he makes it apparent that it's not worth developing the relationship. I wish that he would still dedicate the time and resources necessary to make a win for the territory. When he feels that a certain person he is working with may not be an ally, but someone not to be trusted, he will be very clear about his opinion about that person. This has a ripple effect on the people he tells, and it erodes camaraderie. Dave is usually effective when he gets to know people better and trusts that they are not a threat. But he'll have to get over this if he wants to keep climbing the ladder.
Dave can get overexcited when meeting new people, and this can be a good trait, but some people don't respond to his enthusiasm, and they pull back from him. It makes it hard for them to connect with him. I would like to see Dave work on